Hello and welcome to This Week in Oklahoma Politics. I'm your host, KOSU's Michael Cross, along with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. Well, the governor signed the $7.1 billion budget with what could be considered creative accounting. For example, the House got cut $911,000 in the upcoming year, but also received $1 million supplemental, meaning the chamber actually ended up in the black. Ryan, I know this bookkeeping has been going, for a few years, but does it make it right?
I don't think it makes it right at all. It gives the people of Oklahoma a false impression that we have a budget that actually cuts funding when, in the truth be told, the budget's more of a standstill budget. If you look at one-time funding that's being placed on last year's budget, that's really being used for current and upcoming expenditures in state agencies, then we really have a standstill budget. But as David Blatt at OK Policy has pointed out, that doesn't sound nearly as good in campaign walk pieces.
Now, Neva, what did you think of this?
Well, I think that Ken Miller, when he talked about it earlier this week, I mean, his point was that the GA bill or these appropriations bills are really political documents. There is a lot of posturing going on. Yes, I mean, when you look at the real numbers and how it affects agencies and where the dollars are being spent, the public doesn't pay attention to that. And unfortunately, the lawmakers don't pay a lot of attention to it until the kind of the 11th hour. They're scrambling in the last weeks trying to get the final appropriations bills passed. And that's where the devil's in the details. And I think that at some point they've got to change that process, because this is what happens. I mean, you do play the posturing game of, you know, is it more or less? And that really serves the public, doesn't serve the public well, and certainly doesn't serve them well either.
Yeah, I agree with Neva. I think that this really speaks to the process, and you know, whether that is, you know, moving to a process of having having alternating legislative sessions where 1 year they focus exclusively on the budget and we budget for 2 years rather than what we do right now, which is push everything off to the end, do a bunch of really silly gimmicks up until the end of May. I think that it takes the real conversation away from the fact that we have most state agencies receiving cuts, education still well below the 2009 funding levels, and we look at things like the horizontal drilling credit. That was a huge decision. Whatever side you're on that, there's a huge decision, and we put it off to the last minute of the legislative session.
Well, I think the other thing is you have this kind of gamesmanship with the supplemental appropriations. You say, yes, we're going to take cuts, and then they get in a jam or they can't pay the bills, which we're required to do.
Yeah.
And so then they get a supplemental, and they kind of try to put things back on even keel and start over again. So it puts everyone in a place where there's less accountability, and I think that's one of the big, big issues that we've got to address, is that we are spending billions of dollars, and it's not that there's not a lot of money mm-hmm. flowing through and being managed and being spent. Is it being done wisely and correctly? And I think that's the big challenge for the legislature in the future to really grab hold of and
real
discuss.
Job. Yeah. That's their one that's real one job. If they don't do anything else, they've got to pass a budget. And they treat it like it's not a priority.
Well, it's hostage taking at the end. It's
right.
You know, what are you going to give me so that I can get something else? And
yeah.
That's not a way to govern.
Yeah.
The group Take Shelter Oklahoma is once again working to get a $500 million bond issue on the ballot to put storm shelters in every school. Neva, this new bond would take the money from general revenue rather than a dedicated franchise tax. Do you think there'll be more support for this measure because of that?
I think it's the support question, I think, is open. I think the bigger issue is you basically have the same group coming back and recycling and trying to start over and do this again. The organizers, you know, were in Moore at the elementary school, Plaza Towers mm-hmm. Elementary School site earlier this week with the Reverend Jesse Jackson. I mean, I think they're trying to stir something up and continue to create an interest, and I don't think they've made a compelling case at this point for this type of initiative. So without money, without paid solicitors for those signatures, I think they may well be in a position of getting the same result, and that's coming up short.
Ryan, they were 40,000 signatures short, but they bring in Reverend Jesse Jackson. Do you think that might help their cause a little bit?
Yeah, I think the case has been made. I think that most Oklahomans want to see schools having the ability to build these storm shelters. But I think Neva's absolutely correct. I think that it really comes down to the process and the system that it takes to get these signatures so that you can get your ballot question on the ballot for voters to consider. that's an incredibly expensive process. If you try to do that in volunteers, you're almost certainly going to fail. You know, I visited with experts in ballot initiatives at the municipal and the state level, and everyone tells you that the 90-day requirement, the 90-day signature gathering requirement, really makes this not a direct democracy tool that it's purported to be in our state's constitution. Because if it were really direct democracy, then you or me or Neva, we could all go out tomorrow and start a signature gathering campaign and get something on the ballot. But really what it takes is, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, invested at the front end to gather the signatures and get them verified so that something can get on the ballot.
The only thing I would argue on that is if you have an issue and you have public, strong public sentiment, there have been cases in the past where you can energize folks. You can create an organization. Yes, you need some money to complement the grassroots effort. It can be done, but you have to have people focused on it and believing there's a need. Frankly, I think a lot of folks, again, want to see this punted back to the legislature, let them come back and let them start through the process again and find a reasonable solution that identifies what can be done to bring this to the local level and let these school districts be able to decide. Because to me, the bottom line is that's where it has to rest. I mean, the school districts have to make these decisions, not someone trying to make it for everybody across the board and assume that we're going to have a storm shelter in every school in Oklahoma, which we've all said is unreasonable given the price tag.
Right, and certainly 10 years ago, cockfighting was a big issue for people, mm-hmm. and it was the people themselves that went out and got the signatures and managed to get that passed.
I think that if you look at the overwhelming number, and I think that they had some paid signature gatherers there as well. I think that they invested in folks to go out and circulate petitions. But if you look at the overwhelming number of questions that voters have considered on the ballots over the last several election cycles, I would say, you know, 90%, if not more, of those questions originated from the legislature. The legislature put those questions on the ballot. One of the very first provisions in our state constitution is the right reserved to the people to petition their government through the initiative and referendum process. But it's become so expensive, and the 90-day signature gathering limit is so restrictive that if you want something on the ballot, it's far more likely you'll get it there if you go through the legislature.
And certainly there have been Republicans in the legislature who have also tried to push legislation, and Democrats who both have said, let's lower that threshold because it's one of the most strict, it's one of the strictest in the United States.
Right.
And it's not the signature limit. I think that the signature limit, they lowered that. I mean, that's lowered. I think it's that 90-day period.
It's just too short of a time.
That's too short of a time to get those signatures, yeah.
Now, the primaries are just 18 days away. Speaking of a short time, the primaries are just 18 days away, and the elections are starting to turn negative. A group supporting T.W. Shannon produced some questionable ads attacking his main opponent, James Lankford. And the other day, I saw an ad from opponents of Superintendent Janet Barisi linking her support of Common Core to President Obama. Ryan, are you surprised by this?
No, this is typical, especially when you've got highly competitive races. I think with the U.S. Senate campaign, I talked to a high-level political operative in the GOP the other day, and he was telling me off the record not to count out the fact that Lankford or Shannon could maybe get out of this primary without having to go to a runoff. And I think that if one of them thinks that they can win outright, you're going to see some activity. If the other thinks that they may be behind, they might push negative ads out there to increase Brogdon's number and make sure that it goes to a runoff. So there's, it's a gamble either way. The anti-Lankford ads are interesting. I guess that, you know, they tested a script early on, maybe in my imagination they did anyways, that said that that attacked Lankford for voting with ultra liberals like Tom Cole to avoid global economic catastrophe. But they didn't play all that well, so they made up some of these the budget votes, the Obama budget votes. We don't even really know what those votes are. But you know, Lankford did vote with some very conservative lawmakers like Tom Cole to raise the debt ceiling to avoid global economic catastrophe. It's crazy to me that that's an attack in a campaign.
Yeah, Neva, I know you represent both Lankford and Barisi, but I want to get your thoughts on these negative ads.
Well, I think what Ryan's saying is correct. I mean, it's become a standard fare and an expectation, I think, in the closing stretch of heated, highly competitive political races where you have money, where you can get your message out, particularly on radio and television, that you're going to try to start to paint a contrast. I think the irony somewhat in what has taken place with respect to the Senate race is that you've had all of this, what they call dark money, or these independent expenditure groups that no one knows who they are, that have weighed in to try to be helpful to the campaign that they like, the candidate they like. But I think in the public mind, they see these all together. They see an ad, and if it's pro somebody, that's a pro ad, and they attach it to the candidate. So I think the fact that we saw this week in the Senate race, basically a situation where T.W. Shannon was saying, hey, you know, it's time for these groups not to do this. The question is, was the campaign getting pushed back and they're trying to slow that down, or what the strategy is, who knows? But it is the give and take. I mean, whether it's T.W. Shannon, James Lankford, Randy Brogdon, it doesn't matter. It is going to be that back and forth that we're going to see all the way till June 24th.
You know, T.W. Shannon can apologize for this all day long, but, you know, If he had a choice, and because they can't coordinate, you know, he can say, hey, stop this, but, you know, he can't really coordinate with them.
He can't call him up and say stop this because that's illegal.
But let's be honest. And if T.W. Shannon or anybody else that's the beneficiary of one of these shadow interest groups that are spending money in these campaigns were being honest with themselves, they wouldn't turn it down, right? I mean, they're not going to say, oh, man, I'm glad that they pulled that ad or that they didn't run that ad, because at the end of the day, those ads work, because if they didn't, the money wouldn't be there in the first place.
And does this call into question the Citizens United and the dark money that's been going on that a lot of people have been saying that we need to put a hold on?
Well, I mean, I don't know that we're going to see a hold on it. And I think the question is, when the dust settles and everybody can sit back and analyze what happened, did it make a difference? And I think there'll be a real give and take on that question. Is it because it's a disproportionate amount of money being spent? Not really. It doesn't appear. I mean, both campaigns are extremely competitive in their own right. The IEs on both sides are extremely competitive in their own right. So I think it's an ability to get a big message out there, tailor it to whatever you think is going to move the public, and we'll see when the results come in whether it really made a difference or not.
Yeah, certainly, right. A lot of money was spent in 2012, and we're still not certain if that even had any effect in the actual races across the country.
Right.
The release of United States soldier Bo Bergdahl from a Taliban prison has caused a great deal of controversy, not the least of which is the question of whether President Obama managed to do it legally. Now we have U.S. Senate candidate Randy Brogdon calling for the president to be impeached. Neva, is this going too far?
Well, I think it is. It is an effort to get attention. Obviously, something that that Randy Brogdon in his statements when he made them, I think on Monday, was trying to kind of rally his base on something that a lot of those folks in their heart want to believe and would like to see, but in reality is just kind of shallow rhetoric. It is not something that A is going to happen. B, we can debate the merits of the argument itself, but I think it's just a way to get it. It was an opportunity to get some attention, to get some media, and from that standpoint, it did work.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on this call?
I agree with Neva. Yeah, I would like to say that there are some legitimate questions that demand answers in the Bergdahl situation. But on the exercise of executive authority and the power of the commander-in-chief to act here, I'd like to see some consistency where these same lawmakers are talking about executive overreach in not time-sensitive issues like this or situations like this, but in persistent surveillance and drone strikes and programs that are ongoing and persistent. You know, where's the question about executive overreach there? I do want to point out that the president was damned if he did or damned if he didn't in this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if Bergdahl had died in captivity, his opponents would say, boy, he let an American soldier die in Taliban hands. If he goes in and brings Bergdahl out, you know, then he's being attacked under the current line of attacks. I would say that as commander-in-chief, he's acting the same way that Washington, Madison, Lincoln did. This is not the exchange of hostages to terrorists. This is a prisoner transfer who is... you know, a prisoner of war, and it's very different. And you know, the Israeli government currently does it on a regular basis with regard to their prisoners in Palestinian hands, and vice versa. So there are a lot of legitimate questions here, but this has turned into a political issue. Bergdahl is the new Benghazi.
Thank you very much. Ryan and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.